This is my wife. I don't know if she stood up or not. She's really the brains of the operation. I'm just the mouthpiece and the ranch hand most of the time. But anyway, I thought we'd come today and talk to you about what we do and some of our philosophy. What we were asked to talk about was a little bit about direct marketing, selling to the consumer without any middlemen or anything else. It's certainly just one way to go about this, and I want to preface this whole talk by saying that this is just what we do, and I'm not necessarily saying that it's what everybody should do. It has its own set of challenges and things that some people may not be suited for, but it, for us, works very well and is something that I guess would almost be a little bit of a labor of love, although I guess like most love affairs, it also creates some arguments and challenges on times as well. So who we are. We basically broke our operation into two different pieces. The first one being what we call Right Now Ranch. That is the production side. It's a small family-owned operation, and when I mean small, I mean there's me, there's Cindy, and there's our 11-year-old daughter, Mary. We do all the work, and we produce all of the food that we sell from the place without any interns, employees, or anything like that. As part of our operation, some of the things that you'll see, and we'll get into a little more detail, is that we try very hard to embrace as many traditional farming methods as possible. And as a part of that, when we talk about how we manage our production and stuff like that, you'll get a chance to see how I think we have strayed and are heading back maybe now on our place to a better way of producing food. The other half of our operation is a business that we call Meadow Made Foods. Meadow Made Foods sells and distributes all of the food that is produced by Right Now Ranch. Meadow Made Foods does not sell food from anybody else. One of the reasons that we broke it up this way is that it gave us two opportunities. One, it allowed us to create a brand name that wasn't Ridenour, because most people have a real difficult time figuring out how to pronounce Ridenour. Meadow Made was a little simpler. As well as it gives us a chance to look at the two operations completely separately, because the operations and the tools and skills required to do it are very, very, very different. So let's talk a little bit about our philosophy as we move forward in production. And I'm going to talk about this from this aspect of Right Now Ranch for a minute. When we look at what we're doing, there were some questions or some things that we look at that we ask ourselves. We basically wanted to make sure that anything that we go and do is good for us, is good for our customers, is good for the environment, and is profitable. And it has to basically be all four of those things, or there's not a real good point in moving forward with them. As an example, we tried raising pigs for a while, and it wasn't really good for us. It probably wasn't really good for the ground that they were living on because of the way we were doing the operation. And I would say because we had to rely so much on outside feed and things, it probably wasn't the most profitable operation. And so guess what? We don't raise pigs anymore. On the other hand, there are a lot of things that we have taken on that have worked very well for us. A few things about this too is in one of in the vegetable production, we've been growing vegetables for a long time for ourselves. We now have scaled up to the point where we're producing vegetables for a lot of other people. In the process of doing this, and to give you an idea of how we looked at it, we started growing what would be what we would now know as heirloom vegetables. It was something that we didn't know the word heirloom was associated with vegetables when we started doing. There were just all these cool varieties of tomatoes, and some of them tasted really great, and some of them did really well under our management and in our climate, and so we started using them. As it turns out, it's worked out very well for us. For many of those heirloom varieties, we're able to save seed and develop a land race that continues to improve the strains for us. Which works out very well for us. It's good for our customers because they get a better product year after year, and as well they get some products that are very flavorful and tasty, unlike some of the stuff that they could get elsewhere. It's really good for the environment because we aren't relying on external seed sources and such, as well as the fact that these plants all over time learn to thrive in our environment, and our environment learns to thrive with them in it. So that works out pretty well, and usually they're pretty profitable. I'm not going to say that what we do is so profitable that I could go do this for a living, but hey, we make a good living at it. The other thing that we look at from this standpoint too is the whole sustainability of it. For us, it became an issue of creating a system in which everything is closed, ever as much as possible. We have soil. The soil grows plants. The plants feed our animals. The animals create fertilizer for us. The fertilizer goes in the gardens. The garden soil grows our vegetables. The vegetables go into us and back into the soil. And periodically you put cover crops in the form of grasses and legumes back on that soil, and it just keeps going round and round. Fertility improves, the ecology improves, and the health of the plants, the animals, and the people who live on it all improve. These are actually all pictures of our place. And as a part of this whole creating the circle, we this year made a decision that we were going to start adding animal draft power and get rid of any tractors, because my wife doesn't like me in the garden with a tractor because it compacts the soil and all sorts of other things. Plus, I decided that when I reach 60, which unfortunately isn't that far away, I still wanted to be able to hear. And I've run into a lot of farmers that can't hear anymore after, because I think my newest tractor is a 1965 farm hall, so it's kind of loud. Anyway, what's kind of interesting to me about this whole circle is the fact that in 1954, there's a little box up there that's actually the cover of a book called Soil, Grass, and Cancer. It was written by Andre Voisin. Basically was a treatise on all of the work of his life studying cattle grazing on soils in France and other places around the world. And he realized that when you have a healthy soil, you have healthy plants, you have healthy animals, you have healthy people. When the soils are poor and depleted, you have sick plants, you have sick animals, you have sick people. And it is an excellent read for those of you who really want to understand what soil fertility and human and animal health is all about. Another thing that we look at in our operation and it is the issue of local. And it's one that gets bandied around a lot. There are places that want to say that they're going to source everything from within a 10-mile radius. There are people that talk about staying within their state boundaries. States are really good at promoting products within their states, ignoring the product just 3 or 4 miles to the east of us here in Nebraska, which I would consider local to myself. There's an economist named Michael Schumann, and he came up with a test for consumers to look at when they're making purchasing decisions about local. And the neat thing about his little test here is that it doesn't have anything to do with geography or distance or anything. It's basically 3 simple questions. Is the product being sold by someone who is local, or is the company locally owned? Did they get the raw materials for that product locally? And then the last one is, did they manufacture it locally? And as some examples, and one that we were talking about, which I find really fascinating, is can you have local gasoline? And the answer, probably according to this guy's test, is yes, because Frontier Refinery is in Cheyenne. It's owned by local people. It is able to source oil locally, and they sell it to you in a local place. And I thought, wow, local gasoline, something I hadn't really thought about, but something that makes you, with this test, allows you to think about it. Coffee beans is one that is almost impossible to meet what they call the triple crown, which means they need all three, but it's pretty hard to find coffee that would be triple crown. It can be manufactured locally. There are lots of, they can roast beans locally. The shop can be owned locally, but the last I checked in Wyoming, nobody's growing beans to source the product locally. But it's something that, without belaboring the point now that I have, anyway, it's a way that the consumer can go about making their own choices, and a little tool that just gives them a place to start when they're making their purchasing decisions about local. And for us, we use it a lot. We try to figure out how to buy most of our inputs and our personal products as locally as possible. And sometimes, like with an automobile, it's pretty darn hard to buy anything that even meets the single crown requirement or test there. And then there's always this question that we come up with about scale. You know, is a 100,000-acre ranch a sustainable ranch? Is it local? Some people have to drive further to the ranch headquarters just through their property than they have to get across town to the grocery store. Is somebody growing vegetables in their backyard something that we would consider sustainable or local? The answer to a lot of this from our perspective is one that it really depends. I've seen some very, very large ranching operations that buy basically nothing from the outside. They are completely self-contained and probably as sustainable an operation, especially some of them that have been in business for the last 100 or 150 years doing the same thing. I've also seen backyard and gardeners that run down to Walmart and buy 16 bags of topsoil to dig in and a bunch of plants from the greenhouse that got shipped in from North Carolina that had blight on them such. So, this issue of size to me is almost irrelevant. There are big, big CSA operations out there, thousands of members, and some of them do it very well. Some of them don't. There are some very small CSAs that probably I would say are pretty sustainable just because of their size, but not always. So, it comes down to making some choices in your own mind about how big you want to be and where you want to go. What are your consumers or your potential customers going to think about it? And then, for us, it's one that, do we want to be like a Joel Salatin? Do we want an army of interns over here that we have to manage and train and keep track of and provide housing for? Or do we want to be small, where there's the three of us that, we can go out and we can enjoy the quiet, we can, realize that the reason we live as remotely as we do is because we don't like people. That's not totally true, but for us, that quiet time, that ability to be with nature and with our land by ourselves is something that's really important to us and a choice that we consciously made. And so, I can't see ourselves ever growing to a size that would be as big as some of these out there. Would I like to be a little bit bigger? Yes, but I'm hoping my daughter will take over more of the duties because I'm not going to do any more. And we should have probably had 12 kids if we wanted to get much bigger because, it's just the way we work. But anyway, that's just kind of our perspective on that. Now, to talk a little bit about what we do. We use a number of different marketing channels and I guess we'll talk about those a little bit. How's that? We do two different kinds of CSAs, and I will talk about those in detail. One is a vegetable share, and one is an open subscription. We do farmers markets. We work with a couple small local grocers, which has just declined recently to one small local grocer. We've worked with caterers and don't anymore. We work with personal chefs and continue to do that. And we use websites, and I have a special slide at the end that I didn't even know I was going to get to you. It was going to have so much fun with, except I got to hear the last talk here. Let's talk about vegetable shares. The way that we work our vegetable share program is that the members buy a share of our output at the beginning of the season. They send us a check up front, and that covers the entire season. From there, we provide food to them on a weekly basis. We deliver to farmers markets, which is our delivery point and their pickup point. We do not have people coming out to the place and picking up stuff. In this kind of program, basically, they're making a commitment to us that they're going to show up and buy the vegetables. We're making a commitment to them that we're going to grow the vegetables and deliver it. And we both realize that hailstorms and grasshoppers and other acts of God can occur. And there's a possibility that we might not have anything to deliver and they might not get their money back. But what's the great thing about it? They have vegetables every week. And so far, and in the years that we've been doing this, we have never had a total failure. We have lost certain crops, but we've been able to make it up with other crops. We grow a huge number of different crops, and so we've been able to perform, at least to, I guess, some satisfaction to the consumers, because we've had very, very few of our customers that haven't moved away or had other circumstances leave the CSA program. They continue to buy year after year, and we have added more and more people, although we're still what I would consider to be relatively small. And the great part about a CSA from everybody's perspective, at least in my opinion, is that we get to know them. They get to know us. They know what we do and how we do it. They get to see what we do and how we do it. We really almost, I would say, I'm not going to say almost, we become friends over time. We get little thank you cards for some of the stuff that we do from some of our customers. We get letters from them. We get emails that tell us just how much fun they've had. They supply us recipes of things that they've made with the food that we've provided them, and we share that with the other CSA members. We have created, slowly but surely, a small community all amongst ourselves of people who enjoy the food that we grow, the place that we live, the way that we eat, and in the end, I think it would be fair to say that all of us are really kind of foodies. We like our food, and we work with that. And that this program works probably as well as any program that I've ever seen in my years of doing this, as well as in previous lives as a person in marketing for one of the larger companies in the scientific instrument business and such. This is really a relationship that is based on honesty and trust. And it is almost like a family sometimes. When you do lose a customer, you kind of feel bad, even if it is that they got a better job somewhere else. You feel good for them there, but you're going to miss them. The other kind that we do, another CSA model that we've tried, is an open subscription where they send money to us. We put it basically on account so that they can take the they can just show up. Excuse me. They can just show up at market, or they can call us ahead of time or email us, and we'll make sure that we hold some things back for them. And they just continue to get the food. Well, there's no guarantee from them that they're going to be there every week. There's no guarantee from us that we're going to have any specific thing for them on any given week. But basically, for them putting the money on account, they get a 10% discount is the way it works out. On that money. It's a little bit different in that we don't have the same kind of connection with those people. They're not as regular patrons at farmers markets. And this, although it's still a much, much closer relationship than most people have with the farmers that supply Albertsons. We do get to talk to them. We do know them and stuff. But it is a very different thing. These people are still included in things that we do with all of our CSA customers, in that we do an open house on the place every year, which is basically we grill up some of our grass-fed beef, and they bring some side dishes, and it's kind of just like a good old-fashioned community potluck. And it kind of looks like that because everybody's sitting around at tables, John, and drinking their iced tea and complaining about the weather. So, but it is another way that you can do it. Some of the beauties of the CSA from our perspective is that it's guaranteed sales for us. Every week, especially with the vegetable share portion, we know that some portion of what we harvested is already sold. For us to go to farmer's market knowing that, you know, say some X percentage is already sold is great, because we know we've got that part of it covered. Everything else that we sell is in addition, is more for us. The other thing that works out very nicely is that for the producer, your biggest expenses come in the early season before you have anything to sell. If you're buying seed, if you're buying any soil amendments, if you're needing to buy fuel to go out and till the soil and all that sort of stuff, that's all things that you have to finance yourself. But in this case, what you do is you get your customers to help finance your operation for you, and for that you provide them some pretty darn good food for the rest of the season, and all they have to do is show up. And the nice part is when tomatoes come into season early out of the high tunnel, guess who gets the first tomatoes? Me. But after that, then it's the CSA customers. And then when we've got lots and lots of tomatoes, they hit the market table. So they get some benefits for helping you help get through those kind of tough parts of the year when it's expensive, which helps improve your cash flow, and if you run your CSA where people work for part of their shares as opposed to all money, which is another kind of variation on a thing, it's a way to sometimes get some reasonably low cost labor. But I have heard from some of our folks that we've met that do that sometimes you get what you pay for, even with labor. So don't always expect that they know what a tomato looks like versus kosher weed. They might just hoe it all out for you. One of the neat things, too, is that for our CSA customers, we know that in a typical situation, when somebody gets to farmer's market, they're going to walk through, look and see what everybody has, and then they're going to go back and shop. With our CSA customers, we're not competing with any of the other vendors with those people. They're going to come to our table, and usually they come right away, pick up the vegetables, and move on. And a lot of times, too, they'll see that, oh, we have some of this, and we have some of that, and they'll pick up some other things. And so we're basically allowing the consumer to come to us, get their food that they've paid for, and buy a few of the additional things, and then they might wander the rest of the market looking at what else might be there, because there are some things that we don't grow. It's not profitable for us. We don't do sweet corn. There are lots of people out there that like to do sweet corn, and we'll fill up a pickup bed full of sweet corn and take it there. That's not us, and I don't know how they make money at it. The way we do things, I'd never make money on sweet corn, but it works for them, and so we don't do that. We grow a little bit for ourselves, and that's that. But the other thing that CSAs do that's really, really nice is the fact that it builds community. Like I said, I mean, we know these people. They know us. We hear from them. It's, you know, you can't help but get to know somebody over a period of a couple years when you see them every week for 19 weeks and sometimes more. As the farmers markets have expanded into winter venues in Cheyenne and Fort Collins now for us, we have how many? There's like winter markets total. 18 for both markets?
Yeah.
So we have 18 markets through from November, October, late October through April. That we can do as well. So that's another real bonus. And we have, last year was the first year that we really had some put together some shares for the winter market that people could buy as well. Some of the challenges with CSAs, and you may find this depending on where you're at, is that not everybody knows what a CSA is, and not everybody is really inclined to care about what a CSA is. So there's probably some education that's going to be required. If you are fortunate enough to live somewhere where people know what CSAs are and there's good farmers markets where you can do that kind of delivery, or if you're close enough to the population, you can make it work, wonderful. I really strongly encourage you to take a look at it. It can do some great things for you. One of the challenges that producers have with this is there is a much higher expectation amongst them that you perform, that you provide them what they paid for. And if it is possible for them to lose their money, they need to know that up front, or if you're going to prorate it or whatever, because they are expecting that you give them something. And the other challenge that can be good or bad is you get real immediate feedback. You know, I hate beets. And if you could not put any more beets in my share for the rest of the year, that would be really nice. Turnips. What the heck do I do with turnips? Isn't that just something you feed to pigs? But then again, you hear people that they say, you know, those were the sweetest, greatest beets I've had in years. They were perfect. You get all sorts of feedback from people, and you learn over the years what people like, what people don't like. We used to do a thing called yuck, and I can't remember what yuck stood for.
Your unwanted.
Nah, see, she's getting old too. She can't remember either. But basically, your unwanted crops. And it would allow people to exchange something like the beets that they didn't like for something that we might have available that week that they do like. We kind of discontinued that because it became a nightmare to try to manage and keep track of and everything else. And one of the things overall to help alleviate some of the issues too with crops people like and don't like is the fact that in our whole program we use something that we call Veggie Bucks. We've had Veggie Bucks as part of our shares for a long, long time. In the money that you pay up front, this year it was $35, I think, of the total payment, is basically on account. You can use it to buy more of this, buy more of that, do whatever you want. We get people that use it to buy beef, which is not included in our CSA. We get them people who want to buy extra tomatoes to can, or they want chilies to make salsa, whatever. But it gives them some flexibility as well, so that each week they don't have to show up and come up with money out of pocket. It's a lot easier for them to just come up and do that impulse buy. Oh, boy, I think you've got those. I'll take some of those and just use my Veggie Bucks for it. It's wonderful. It works really well. Makes it simple for them to pick up extra stuff. And I didn't mean to do that. This is just, and I'm sure you can all read that. Can the person in the back tell me what it says right down there at the bottom? What this is this is actually a sheet from our website. And we also have it in paper, I think we say we've given to people. But it's just kind of a rough idea that we use to help people understand what crops that they can expect in what part of the season. And up and down the right hand or the left hand side is the list of all the different crops that we grow. Across the top is June through October, and the little X's are about that time of season when they can expect those crops. For all of you who have grown things, it never comes out real well, but it's close. And it at least gives them an idea of when they can expect things, which goes back to that whole thing of making sure that when you set up your CSA, you communicate well with them, give them the opportunity to understand what they should be looking for, but also make sure that they understand that just because it says that you're going to get rhubarb in June doesn't mean you're going to get rhubarb in June, because oftentimes the rhubarb is done by June because, April got really, really warm, and then it froze again in May, and so it's just done, and you don't get any this year. So those things do happen. Farmers markets. I don't want to dwell on farmers markets too terribly long. It's a very traditional venue. Most people know what a farmers market is. I don't think people go to a farmers market and stand around and go, gosh, what are they doing here? I think they really get it. The great part about the way farmers markets for us do numerous things. It gives us a place to deliver our CSA shares. It gives us a place to make contact with potential new customers, because there's nothing like somebody walking up to the table and getting this bag of all these foods that aren't on the table. Like, there's tomatoes in there, and they look at that and they're like, well, I wanted some tomatoes. Oh, sorry, those are our share customers. We don't have enough tomatoes yet. Well, how do I get a share? It's a great marketing tool for you. Plus, it's a great way to get rid of all of the extra vegetables that you'll have each week. Because we do a fixed share, so to speak. It's a certain size. We don't just pick everything and divvy it up amongst the customers. It gives us a spot to take all those extra vegetables and sell them. One could argue that we could just take on some more CSA shares and not do it, have the table at market. But one of the things that I have to remind everybody who tells me that is that we don't sell just vegetables. We sell beef, too. And beef is not one of those things that has worked very well for us as part of a CSA program. People want what they want when they want it when it comes to beef. How's that? This week they're thinking, hey, you know, wouldn't it be great if we had a couple steaks? And if the share program was to give them a roast this week, that just doesn't work very well for them. They have guests coming. They want a bunch of burger. So we're going to be at the farmer's market. And one of the neat things about having a nice, colorful display of vegetables is that people come up and take a look and realize, oh, hey, you have beef, too. Even though in our signage we have this great big huge sign in the back that says grass-fed beef and other fine foods, and it's amazing how many people can't read at a farmer's market. I shouldn't say that. They just don't. I mean, it's so noisy visually at a farmer's market. You've got all the colors and all of the textures with the vegetables. You have people moving and talking and everything. People don't read signs. We have learned that the hard way year after year after year is people don't read signs at farmer's markets until they've decided they want something, and then it's like, where's the price list? And you can point to it, and they're like, oh, and then they read it. One of the cool, nice parts about selling strictly through farmers markets is there's no expectation on the part of the consumer that you will have anything on any given week. Because they're going to walk up or walk past your table, they're going to look at it and see you have this week, and that's what they're going to do. Whereas our CSA customers might expect that they should be getting tomatoes about now. It's not like the folks at the farmers market come up and say, hey, how come you don't have tomatoes? Although they do. you don't have to have them there that week because you haven't made a promise to deliver them. And I would say that while farmers markets have a high degree of contact, you do tend to talk to a lot of people. People come up and ask you questions, and you shake hands and stuff like that. The kind of communication that occurs at a farmers market is way different than what happens at a CSA. CSA customers tend to have a conversation, whereas farmers market people say, hey, I want that, I want this, I bought that last week and it was really lousy, what are you going to do about it? It's just a little different. It isn't the community that you would develop with a CSA. Grocers, to me, are a little bit like farmers markets in that you're not creating a community, you're not creating customers per se. I like grocers from the standpoint, for us, we utilize them as an opportunity for people to try our beef without us having to go out of our way or to drive to, some foreign location, so to speak, for them to get it. We get people who say, hey, I saw something about you, we saw the article in the newspaper in the food section last week, whatever. I think I'd like to get some of your beef. Well, have you tried it? No. Well, why don't you go down to the food co-op or down to such and such and buy it and see if you really like it. Every grass-fed producer has a different tasting grass-fed product. I don't care what anybody says. The forages and Forbes and the climate and the season and the way you manage is going to make a lot of difference. And you can have five different grass-fed beef producers. You will have five different flavors of beef. I guarantee it. Some of it, well, I mean, and it's not that I'm suggesting it's good or bad, it's just what it is. Anyway, a couple things to remember is that most grocers don't like to work on COD. They like you to deliver it and come back or to, you know, basically send an invoice. They'll pay you in 30 days. Some will do COD. And the other thing to remember is that once your product reaches the grocery store, it's not in your control anymore. The story that the grocer tells about your product may have nothing to do with you, and it may. It just depends. So if you're going to go out and want to kill the, or I guess, so to speak, slice the fat hog through selling at grocers, remember that you're going to have a lot of marketing expenses of your own that you won't get back because you're going to end up selling it at wholesale and stuff. If you're going to do all that kind of marketing, I would encourage you to think about doing it personally and directly to the consumer. Caterers. Caterers are fine, except their business tends to be sporadic. They have something here and there, and then they don't have anything where they need your products. And usually they call you and needed it yesterday, and is it thawed already for me? Things like that. But it can be a great opportunity to get product into the mouths of consumers. So that they can try your stuff. And a lot of the caterers that we've worked with have been very good at letting people know that this is a local product, it came from so-and-so and such. Personal chefs, if you don't know what a personal chef is, these are chefs that come into your home and they'll fix several days' worth of meals in your kitchen for you and leave. It's really cool. I wish we had one that lived close to us. It would save my wife a lot of time because I don't cook very much. But anyway, they're wonderful people. They're chefs. These are trained chefs. And so these people know their food. They know how to cook it. And they will work very closely with you. We've had excellent luck with a couple of them as far as our beef. They have recommended that people buy our beef and put it in their freezers, so when they get there, they can have the beef available to cook. It's a really neat relationship. You're going to end up selling to them wholesale because obviously they're trying to run a business and make money as well. So I like this one over the grocers because they're doing all the marketing and sales, and we aren't. And so our costs to the in this are quite a bit less. And again, they're very honest. They know what they like and what they don't like, and they'll let you know what they like and don't like about your stuff and how maybe you could change your packaging to be like this or portion size a little different for that. And it's good feedback. Then there's websites. We do have a website. My wife keeps that up for us. And for us, it's mostly a communication and education tool. We don't sell frozen beef or vegetables or CSAs or anything through our website. We give information on it. We do sell jerky. It's the one product that we sell, and we don't require them to contact us in any other way. It's really a great tool from our perspective in that we can put all the information that we used to end up telling them over the phone or typing up in an email in a nice little place where they can go get it. We can direct them to it. We can provide them a link to it. We've got it done, and it works really well. Because we only have so many animals to slaughter every year, and because we only have so many CSA shares, and because there are a lot of intricacies, we don't sell those just click this and buy one. We require them to contact us and make sure that they understand. Another channel that you will find is non-owned sites. These are people that want to list you in their directory, but they don't you don't have any control over it to speak of, and they don't really have any interest in you other than a lot of times they want you to pay for your site. And if you're selling things off them, they want a percentage. I will say that most of them are not worth the time and effort to even bother responding or following up on. Some of them are very, very good. If you get into this and you do this, you'll find out very quickly that some of them are good. Two that I would highly recommend for people, depending on what you're doing. One is Local Harvest. Local Harvest is a great site. We do sell. We have a store on their site, and they do a wonderful job. They've got a ton of information and a ton of producers out there, almost all of them small, and almost all of them committed to some sort of local food production. The other one, if you're into meats primarily, is Eat Wild. EatWild.com is another great one. Those are two sites that we do get people saying, hey, I found you on this site, or I saw you had stuff there and I have some questions for you. There are other ones that, I see our name listed or our company and all that, and I don't know who they are or what they do, and I've never had anybody say they used it. This is the slide that I put together last night, not knowing that I was going to hear a presentation about this just a few minutes ago, who was promoting the use of social media. For us, we're old, apparently, because I don't get it. I just, as I told my wife, I just don't see tweeting somebody telling them that I'm picking Colorado potato beetles right now and throwing them in a jug of soapy water. And I don't see tweeting them telling them I am turning the compost pile from the horses yet again and it still stinks. I just don't think our customers care about that sort of stuff. But it is part of the market. It isn't part of what I see right now as our market. Our customers are, guess what, about our age. And they, guess what, think a lot like we do. We still have some customers that don't have email. It's interesting that when you start telling your story to people, that you attract people that are interested in your story, and guess what, they turn out to be a lot like you because they like the story that you were telling. Wonder how that works. So I'm pretty sure that, well, my wife says I should probably embrace this technology because it's the place we're going next. I will also say that she leaned over at me in the middle of this and she says, you know, I still think I prefer to talk to people in the real world. So it's one of those things. I don't know whether it's good or bad. We've tried just a little bit and we don't see the benefit because it isn't really who we're targeting. But for those of you who have family and friends and people that do this, and if you're doing it, it's probably something to look at because you understand it. I don't. I don't have a Facebook account. I don't have a Twitter account. I don't have a YouTube. I did watch a YouTube video the other day, but Anyway, I guess in the end what I wanted to hopefully send you home with is the fact that I think CSAs are a great program. I think they offer some real tremendous opportunities for you to learn a lot about your customers and for customers to learn about a lot about you. And I think that it is a great opportunity for developing a word of mouth campaign to bring local foods and small food production back to America. The only thing that I would also hope that you would walk away with is that consumers are savvy. They're getting smarter and smarter and smarter. And so when you are out in front of them and when you're talking to them and you're giving your message, make sure that what you say is what you mean. And make sure you mean what you say and be honest with them. We make mistakes, as my wife will attest to. She delivered the wrong stuff to somebody yesterday and now has to make it up. But hey, we'll make it up. It happens. Mistakes happen. Don't worry about it. When you have that relationship with them, it works. They forgive you and they wait for their garlic to show up next week. Anyway, that's all I have. If you have questions, we'd be more than happy to answer some for you. The question was on our subscription accounts, when they put it on there, if they don't use it all in a year, do we give it back? Our paperwork says no, you use it or you lose it. Depending on the circumstances, it would really depend on our part. Probably what we would try to convince them to do is just carry it over to next year and use it as opposed to, we've had customers have serious auto accidents and in something like that, they could probably use the cash. We'd give it back to them. How many are we able to do, or how many do we do? We have 18?
We have 16. 16? We're actually a micro CSA. We're really a micro CSA. We have 16 members, and part of that limitation is because I do most of the harvesting myself, and I'm also simultaneously harvesting for the farmers market. And we do the subscription basically once a week. I'm taking most of the shares to the Cheyenne market, and then I bring a few into Torrington the next day, but they're all being harvested at the same time. We could probably double that if we wanted to deliver CSA shares to the Saturday market that we do down in Fort Collins. And most CSAs have employees to help with the harvest. So you can scale that up pretty quickly.
How hard did you,
Go ahead.
How hard did you really try with incorporating the beef? Did you try just a few times? Because it surprises me that people aren't willing to do that, because one of my biggest things about selling my beef is people don't have the freezer space, and it seems to me that if you were delivering on a weekly or a monthly basis, that they'd be more willing to do it. So I'm just curious, you know, how hard did you try?
To paraphrase the question, she wants to know how hard we really tried to get beef into our subscription program, and into our CSAs. Sorry, and did we do that? And I'm going to let Cindy answer.
Well, I drew up a couple packages that people could choose from, and I think the biggest problem with doing it is that we are delivering our CSA to market, and our beef is at the market. And they can pick up any cut that they want when they come in. And they also know that if they want something specific, that they can request it in advance and I'll bring it in. So I just never had anybody really want to add the beef to their CSA share as a regular program. Now, on our subscription program, a number of people are doing a combination of beef and vegetables together, but what I do is I send a message every week telling them what we're going to have at market, and then they select what they want me to bring in and hold for them, and so they select beef and vegetables, and I have it there ready for them, and it's the discount program that attracted them to the subscription. Right. Right. And our subscription CSA runs year round. You can start it at any point, and it runs for 12 months, and so they can come into the winter market and pick up beef. But there are other CSAs that have successfully incorporated meats into the CSA. But most CSAs have pickup points, not at markets. It's just that we're so remote. I mean, we're 25 miles from Torrington, 70 miles from Cheyenne, 120 miles from Fort Collins. So we don't have people coming up to the farm to pick up their CSA. And we're not dropping a lot of, some CSAs use grocery stores or community places as drop points, or they have people carpool into the farm, or they give a discount to one of their share members, and that share member becomes the neighborhood pickup point. In that case, a lot of those folks have had success incorporating bread, eggs, meats, forming partnerships with other farmers to provide a wider variety. But where we're dropping at the farmers market, that variety is all there. And I think that's why we've had more difficulty adding that in. Now, I was very successful last year adding egg shares. a bear snake discovered how to get into our chicken coop, and we had some other issues, and my egg production dropped lower than I expected, and then I had to try to... I actually bought eggs from LaDonna Foley a couple times to give to my share members, to give eggs to my share members. So... but that was really easy to add in, were the eggs.
Yes?
CSAs are new to me, and I'm wondering, if I were to sign up, what would I expect in a box? Do you go by pounds? How do you know how much each customer or each member
The question is, how much does somebody get in a weekly share? For us, Cindy has, she can't help herself, she's a chemist, but she has this spreadsheet all laid out with all the different vegetables and how many pounds of this and how many pounds of that they're going to get each week, and that works out to about this much in sales, and she has it all figured down to the penny. Not quite, but no, we came up with what we thought was a reasonable amount of food for a couple, and works within the price range that we kind of targeted. Some places, literally, they pick everything, and if they've got 25 or 100 customers, they just divide it into 100 boxes, and you get this. So you might end up with like 500 pounds of zucchini when zucchinis are really going, 1 week, and you may not have any the next, and so on. And that's one of those things. You can certainly go to our website. It gives some idea of what we do as far as what goes into them. In most CSAs, if you go out and look, they'll give you a pretty good idea of what's in there each week, and you'll see it's all over the board. And it just, but you can also see that the pricing is all over the board as well. So it's really hard to answer the question because it really depends on how you set the program up. Yes, sir.
That sort of segues into my next question. How much can you expect charge per share? You know, like for you guys, but for other CSAs, typically, how much can you ask your customers?
Our share price is $395. Is that right?
Just sort of.
Yes, or yeah. Sort of.
Well, in 2009, our share price was $375, and this year I kept that same price if you signed up before May 1st, and it was $395 after that. But it varies a lot with the region. I think about $400 is pretty typical for this area and our growing season. In California, you have higher land prices and higher taxes and higher labor prices, and wow. Shares tend to be a lot more, $550 to $600 for the same, like, 19, 20-week season, and a lot more if, you know, they have a lot of fruit to add and a lot more growing weeks. And if you're in Jackson, maybe you only do a 12-week season, and so it might be a lot less. And another thing is CSA shares are really hard to comparison shop for because they're so different. Even mine, there's no standard. How much do you get? How many pounds do I get this week or that week? It varies so much across the season. And so it's really hard to comparison shop. I had some customers who decided to try another CSA this year because it was more convenient for them. And they're back on my waiting list already, and we're not even through the season, so.
Yes, sir.
In terms of the two-part question, when you started up, how difficult was it? And also, what kind of profitability? What kind of return on investment?
Oh, the question was, the first part was how long or when? How hard was it to get started? And then the second question was, how profitable is it, or what is our return on investment? I love the ROI discussion because it depends on what you consider your investment. Is my time worth anything or not? But I'll get to that in a minute. How hard was it? I think it's easy to say that we started fairly small. I mean, even smaller than we are today. We had been growing our own vegetables for quite a while. And then slowly but surely, we've just kind of scaled up as we learned that our season was better here than it was at 7,200 feet in the mountains. We have actually a growing season here that doesn't frost or snow every month. And we just kind of eased our way into it. We started with some small farmers markets. We did not start with the CSA. The CSA is something that we added a couple years after we've been going to market and had some more information. The challenge is more probably in how hard was it, was more that we have a really, really good, healthy, well-adapted line of kochia that grows on our place really well, and some other weeds that we have over the periods, I mean, had to work on to eradicate from the gardens, although the bindweed still flourishes pretty well in at least not in the gardens, although We saw one the other day creeping back in. So, you know, and so for us, you know, it was kind of an easy transition into just getting bigger because we'd been doing all this gardening prior to it. Adding in slowly but surely every year more and more of the heirloom vegetables to the point where we grow pretty much exclusively heirloom vegetables, save a lot of our own seed. There are some things that are so hard to keep from crossing that we haven't got to the point where we can do that, like some of the squashes and things. But, you know, it has been a very evolutionary process from, you know, what, 25 by 150-foot garden to...
No, about half an acre.
To you know, more. So as far as profitability, is it profitable? Yes, probably on a number of different levels. financially, yes, we do show a profit every year. Part of the reason that we made the decision to break the operation up is that if Meadow Made Foods looks like it's going to make too much money and we might have to pay taxes, right now a ranch could charge more for stuff, couldn't it? And we can move it over there, or vice versa. So we, you know, everybody's given the opportunity, especially in agriculture more so, is to, you can, you know, kind of determine who's making money when and where and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, I still think that we don't get paid real well for our time, although I'm not sure that that was why we went into it in the first place. You know, it was more of a lifestyle change. I mean, we could still be desk jockeys somewhere and making good money, but we chose not to.
Can I make a comment on difficulty? On the difficulty thing, I do know of farmers who've gone out and started a CSA successfully in their first year of farming on a particular plot of land. But I tell you, that takes guts that I don't have. I highly recommend that you start farming and get into direct marketing of your vegetables, take them to farmer's market or direct, you know, or wholesale them to a grocer, but keep good records on your yields, when you harvested and how much.
We're afternoon.
So that when you do a CSA, you know, when you go to set it up, you have a pretty good idea that I can supply this many tomatoes in the middle of August, you know, off of this piece of land and this much kohlrabi and so on, and it's going to be harvested about now. If you don't have that history on that piece of ground, I think you really, you're really stepping out, you know, to try to start it up right away. And we had a couple years experience on that ground before we started it.